Welcome to the Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Josiah Smelser. The Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast is the shared journey of building a real estate investment property business from square one. Join me as we learn together how to conquer the real estate game to reach financial freedom. Together, we will learn from people in all areas of real estate and business in our personal trek towards escaping the rat race. Be you. Do the work you love. Play the long game. What's going on, ladies and gents? Thanks for joining us for another episode of the podcast. Today, I've got Kevin McGrath of Cardinal Industrial. Kevin was formerly a broker for CBRE and started investing in multifamily syndications on the passive side, has moved over to Cardinal Industrial and is now a principal there and doing industrial syndications. So we're going to chat about how to, and Kevin's got a cool story because he started learning real estate through the broker lens and then started investing. And we're going to talk about how you could do the same and maybe the perks to being a broker and the downsides as well. And also his path from multifamily to industrial. Industrial is a really interesting opportunity right now. This is September 2020. So COVID has really driven the industrial asset class up because e-commerce has been booming. So this is a really interesting conversation I'm going to have with Kevin. So yeah, I think you're really going to enjoy this. Without further ado, let's dive in. Real quick, I wanted to let you know that I'm now offering coaching and consulting on a limited basis at a very affordable rate. If you have a project you're working on or struggling with identifying and creating a plan to reach your goals, this could be a good fit for you. Feel free to reach out to me at Daily Real Estate Investor on Instagram and shoot me a direct message there or send me an email. The email is josiahsmelser@gmail.com. That's josiahsmelser@gmail.com. Also, check out my book, Dream It and Build It, How to Crush Your Real Estate Investing Goals. You can find it on Amazon. Now let's dive into our episode. Kevin, welcome to the podcast, man. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Josiah.
It's my pleasure. I thought it'd be cool to bring Kevin onto the podcast. He's got experience not only investing in multifamily syndications, but he's actually doing some work in industrial as well. And he was formerly a broker with CBRE. I also work with CBRE. I was on the valuation side. I did a lot of multifamily valuation. Also did some appraisal work on industrial properties as well while I was there. But CBRE is a great place to learn commercial real estate, and those brokers are the best. So I know Kevin's got a lot of good experience just from having worked there. He's now moved over to Cardinal Industrial, is a principal there. And I'm looking forward to learning about your story, Kevin, and what you're currently working on. I guess give us at a very high level how you got into real estate and tell us about yourself.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Josiah. The first piece of real estate I bought was with two friends in 2004. It's right when I got out of college. It was a condo that we, it was just kind of a value add renovation that we flipped and made a nominal profit, but that kind of got my feet wet into real estate. And then full-time I joined in 2007 in brokerage and industrial.
Before the podcast, you mentioned having had invested in some multifamily deals before getting into industrial and doing what you're doing now. Tell us about that.
It took me a while to invest passively in real estate. I told you I got into real estate in 2007. I didn't invest in my first deal until 2018. So it was 11 years before I entered real estate full-time and then invested passively. And I was doing what a lot of brokers actually do, was investing in the stock market, because I didn't know what other ways, how else to invest. And that was the easiest, best route to go. It was just having lack of information. It wasn't doing it for me. I was making a little bit of money, but I wanted the passive income. I didn't know how to get there, but through searching online, I can't remember exactly what the avenue was. I came across passive investing, started learning more. I think I read Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That got me acquainted with it and started looking for syndicators to find deals in multifamily. And that's how I, you know, came across a particular syndicator where I've invested, I think, in 5 deals.
Cool.
Starting in 2018.
That's awesome. So, and there's a number of different ways we could go here, and I want to definitely talk about, you know, your path and whatnot, but let's talk about, something that I think a lot of listeners are probably interested in. And that's the idea of, you know, starting off on the brokerage side. You mentioned unlimited upside to your earnings, which is obviously something that a lot of people in their jobs don't have. You know, and I've got some good friends that are brokers and successful brokers, and, you know, having talked to them, like the earnings upside is tremendous. What would you advise people that are interested in becoming commercial brokers, and what would you tell them about your experience? What kind of advice would you give to yourself back when you were trying to get into this?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's a great way to make a living. You're right. Like I said earlier, uncapped commissions, there's no ceiling to what you can make. I mean, it's really a testament to how hard you can work, how well you can network, how well you can build relationships. But I would advise whoever does it to always look at supplementing that income with some more stable passive income. Because while it has all those positives regarding compensation and certainly flexibility in time, you're most of the time your own boss. The drawback is you're starting over every year at zero. And many times it's not even starting over every year. It's just starting over after you get a deal done. So I felt like it became a little bit too much of a grind. And I felt like I was on the hamster wheel a little bit. And that could have been prevented had I started investing earlier in my career to supplement my ordinary income with passive income. So I would advise someone that if they do get into brokerage, and I would recommend it, that they sooner than later start looking at how they're supplementing their ordinary or working income.
Yeah, I think that's very insightful. And one thing you just said that I think is very interesting, which I observed when I was working as a commercial appraiser for CBRE, hardly anyone I worked with invested in the real estate side of things. Everybody's got their 401ks and they're making great income and all this. I was shocked because I've always been the most interested in investing in this stuff. And I was going around trying to get groups of people to gather with me to go invest in deals. And they were saying they don't have time, you know, which was crazy to me, because to me, you don't have time not to, because this is, if you do this right, you can make a ton of money investing in real estate the right way. And it can give you a ton of financial freedom and just freedom to not be held captive by the grind, like you're talking about. And something you mentioned just now that's very interesting is I had a job in public accounting when I started right out of college, and it fit the description of exactly what you're saying, but it wasn't in brokerage, right? It was a grind. Like, you can make a lot of money doing it. It's about, I mean, pretty much how hard you're working. You feel like you're always, like, after you're done with one audit, you're on to the next one. You know what I mean? And it was stressful, man. And everybody's driving the Beamers and everything else, but nobody owns any, you know, passive income producing assets, which it's so strange. I guess that's just honestly representative of how the average person invests their money, though.
There's no question about that. Yeah. That it is representative of how the average person invests their money. And what you said regarding the lack of brokers who invest in real estate, I've been thinking about why that is. Is it because brokers are too close to the deals where they see not only the good, but they see the bad, and maybe the bad sticks out to them. They see all the risk, and they see all kind of maybe the horror stories more so than the average person. I don't know the exact answer. There's probably more than one, obviously, but it is true that if I had to put my thumb on it, I would say 75% of real estate brokers out there do not invest in real estate. And it really blows my mind, because they're the ones who are the experts who should know these deals inside and out, at least finding the properties, maybe not putting the investors or the debt together. But it is strange to me why more brokers don't invest in real estate. You know, we're talking about the passive income, but what about all the tax benefits that come along with it that I learned just later on? If I had known all the tax benefits 10 years ago, maybe that would have prodded me to pursue it more quickly. But you're right. Brokers tend to, and I don't want to stereotype all of them, but typically brokers, you know, they drive nice cars, fancy cars. They dress really well, wear nice suits. So there's more of an emphasis on maybe material things versus investing. I don't know. It could be stereotyping a little bit, but you know, that's what I saw firsthand, over my 12, 13 years in the business. So, you know, one of my goals since coming over to the direct investing side is to educate brokers on here's what you're missing out on if you're not investing and taking advantage of all the tax advantages of investing passively while being a real estate professional.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be that, I mean, some of these brokers are making over $1 million a year. Maybe they don't have time to mess around with something that's going to pay them $50,000 a year, you know, or maybe that's what they're thinking. We both know
I don't know what the alternative is, investing in the stock market.
Exactly.
That's what they're doing. And cause I, you know, I, in our CB office in Columbus, you know, it's funny, guys used to day trade, you know, the stock market, quite a bit. And I just used to chuckle because they don't know what they're talking about. I mean, basically they might as well go to Vegas and start gambling because that's essentially what they're doing.
Yeah.
And, if they had allocated that their time and energy to real estate, I think they'd be better served.
Yeah. So, and before we move on, I'm just curious about this. You worked at Colliers, you worked at CBRE. These are very competitive brokerages, do a lot of big deals. You know, when I was at CBRE on the appraisal side, we were appraising the best properties in town. And I was in Fort Worth, I was in Little Rock. You know, we're appraising the high rise, the biggest, the class A stuff, right? So you were brokering that stuff. What's the environment like on the brokerage team? Is it as cutthroat as it seems?
Well, it depends what market you're in.
Sure.
So where I was in Columbus, it was not.
Okay.
It was competitive, but friendly.
That's good.
Yeah, it was. But you go into other markets and it's definitely not the case. I had a colleague of mine who used to work with me at CB in Columbus, moved to CB in New Jersey. And that's a complete 180. Cutthroat, fast, working a lot more hours. So it's market driven, but it can be extremely cutthroat, extremely competitive, but it's going to depend what market you're in.
Yeah. Really. Cool. So let's move into, and I know you're with Cardinal Industrial now, which industrial is a really interesting asset class. It's got its own different characteristics as opposed to multifamily, but industrial is really on fire right now. You know, we're in September 2020 as we record this. I'm seeing a lot of industrial deals come from my multifamily investors that I'm on different lists for, and I get all their syndication emails. I've seen a number of investment deals offered lately that look very promising. I know industrial is really doing well. So, I'm excited to talk to you about what you're working on right now. Before we move into that though, tell us on these syndication deals, you know, you spent time learning commercial real estate. You spent about 10 years before you started investing on the LP side in some syndications. What attracted you to those multifamily deals that you invested in?
Really what I was looking at, Josiah, was a couple of things. One was my cash flow, what I was getting each month, and then also what the projected equity multiple was at the end of the year. When I was looking at because these were value add multifamily, so I was looking for a little bit of a higher equity multiple, and really my standard was I wanted a 2x equity multiple over a 5-year holding a period. And again, I was looking for at least an 8% cash on cash return with a 2x equity multiple. And that was kind of my barometer. And so far, so good with the deals I've invested in so far. again, that they're all about a 5-year holding period, and we're in, we're almost about halfway through them. And because of COVID, actually a couple of them are doing, I would say, okay. But I think we haven't seen the true reality of what's going to become of the economy because of the stimulus is still being unwound a little bit. So by no means am I an economist, but I think it's going to be a better judge of where we are first, second quarter of next year versus today because of this, the stimulus is still in play.
Yeah. Very interesting. And it's, there's a different level of sophistication with the people listening to this show. Some are complete newbies that don't own any commercial real estate. Some are very well aware of all the different metrics that are used and talked about in syndication. So explain to us at a very high level what the equity multiple means.
Yeah, it's essentially if I put $100,000 investment into a real estate deal, over that lifetime of the investment, I want to recoup net profit $100,000. So my total investment after 5 years, including the initial investment, would be $200,000. So I would be getting, call it 8% annually, or $8,000, and then on top of that would be my pro rata share on the exit would be. So adding those two together should equal about $100,000 of net profit.
Yeah, and equity multiple is a really simple way for you to look at a deal and say, how long is it going to take me to get my money back, and at what multiple of that initial investment? So if you see a 2x over 5 years, you're going to double your money in 5 years. And then you've got an 8% cash on cash return as well. And you'll see IRR thrown in. So there's all kinds of thing metrics you can compare deals by, and everybody's got their own thing that they like. But the first thing I always look at is cash on cash, and then equity multiple is a big one as well. How long is it going to take me to double my money, to triple my money? If you're doubling your money in 5 years versus 7 years, you could turn that money around and use it in another deal. And that's what a lot of people do, is they get into these. I know one guy who's done, I think, more than 15 syndications at this point, and the people he invests with typically return his capital and then just keep him in the deal. And so he's got ownership in 15 deals now. They never sold.
They just refi and
they just refi, pay him his initial investment back, and he goes along for the ride on house money.
That's what I was looking for also. Some of these will refi, and I probably won't get all my initial investment, but at least a portion.
Yeah.
And that's just how you create leverage and snowball and build it. And I see more wealth created in real estate from refinancing and pulling money out of deals than any other method. It is super powerful because money that's being pulled out is tax free. So
absolutely.
I've seen more multimillionaires made more quickly by buying a property and then refining within 1 or 2 years once the property gets stabilized.
Yeah. Very cool. So let's talk about industrial. And I've appraised industrial before, and it's a completely different animal than multifamily. Tell us the characteristics of industrial that are significantly different than multifamily.
I mean, just on the surface, the different assets, I mean, they're completely different. Some of the deal metrics are going to be really similar. There's going to be a lot of similarities between tax benefits and the different investment metrics we look at are going to be similar, but where they differ most is obviously on, the physical aspects of them. They're really, to make it as simple as possible, there's three different type of industrial buildings that are in existence today. There's what I'll call distribution warehouse, which is what it sounds like, where companies distribute goods and services out of. There's a manufacturing where companies manufacture their goods. And then there's flex industrial, which is smaller industrial on a square footage basis that has a higher component of office. So if it's a 10,000 square foot unit, there might be 10,000 or 5,000 square feet of office and 5,000 square feet of warehouse. So really those are the three type of industrial buildings. Now, within those three types, they break them down a little bit further, but to keep it as simple as possible, those are really the three main types of industrial buildings.
When you talked about the building with the office space and industrial, the flex, I thought of Dunder Mifflin Paper Company.
That's spot on.
Yeah.
that is a flex building.
Michael Scott goes down to the industrial area and always jacked with all their stuff, you know, the warehouse.
That's hilarious. I've thought about that too. Yeah. That is a flex building.
Yeah. I love it. So, I mean, when I was appraising these, the first thing I thought is, wow, you go from having 200 tenants in your 200 door apartment complex or 200 families, maybe 500 tenants, right, to having one tenant, you know, in this massive building. So there's obviously different risk profiles with those, but a lot of times these tenants that are signing these leases on these massive industrial buildings are, you know, high credit, A-rated tenants. Like, I mean, give me some examples of some tenants that would be leasing these properties. I'm thinking like Amazon, but I don't know, maybe they own their own stuff.
No, they lease. I'm not saying they don't own any, but yeah, I would say that the large majority, they lease. And I saw an article actually that came out this morning that Amazon in just this month alone, they are leasing or taking occupancy in 100 distribution centers across the world, just this month alone. It's such a massive, massive amount that I can't even really comprehend it. That's how quickly they are growing. But yeah, Amazon would be the prime and number one example. They are probably the number one industrial tenant right now.
Yeah, Walmart or somebody?
Walmart's up there. You know, I would say the growing e-commerce companies.
Yeah.
Home Depot, Lowe's are really expanding their footprint. FedEx is really expanding. Any companies right now that are related to e-commerce, Josiah, are really exploding. And really, the last two or three years, they've been playing catch up to Amazon because Amazon has just been growing rapidly, even more so since COVID. So, you know, it's something that we're going to continue to see. And it's one of the reasons that industrial has become really almost the darling of the investment world because of the growth of e-commerce.
Yeah.
That's been further accelerated by COVID. So COVID hasn't really been kind to a lot of the different asset classes but for the most part, it has been to industrial.
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask you next. You just answered my question for me. It was going to be, it seems to me that office has gotten slammed. A lot of retail has gotten slammed. Multifamily has done really well up until the point that they're saying you can't evict people, right? Because now it gives tenants a reason maybe not to pay and they still owe the money, but you can't get them out. That's the only hiccup I've really seen in multifamily for the moment. And I know that's a temporary thing. I don't think multifamily is going to have any problems longer term, just my hunch, but I would be scared to invest in office and retail right now, you know? Unless there's some specific cases that I've got a compelling reason, like maybe a retail strip center that's got a lot of really stable tenants or something, that might be a little different. But industrial to me, you've got the e-commerce stuff going crazy and COVID with people having to work from home, being stuck at home, people are using e-commerce more. There's been a lot of growth there. So it seems like it's driving this industrial freight train forward and cap rates are compressing. And it's really probably the hottest asset class right now, in my opinion, to invest in. So let's talk through, you know, what a good industrial deal looks like to invest in, and what you're currently doing with Cardinal.
Yeah. So like multifamily, there's different types of industrial deals. There's value add. There's more stabilized deals. Called core. What we're seeing right now in industrial, the value add deals are a little bit more difficult to come by. At Cardinal, we invest in stabilized industrial assets. So that means we are buying 100% occupied buildings that have long-term leases in place, or long-term lease, because a lot of the buildings we're buying have one tenant. A long-term lease means 5 years of term remaining on their lease, plus typically 7 years or 10 years. So these are long-term, really stable. So what you're going to find, Josiah, is that on a typical value add deal, whether it be an office, multifamily, or industrial, you might have a projected equity multiple, like we're talking about before, of call it 2x over 5 years. If you're buying stabilized, stabilized industrial building, your equity multiple might not be as high, because there's not as much upside in the rent. But what you get for instead is that long-term stability with a credit tenant. So we're buying deals that have annual rent escalations. So typically anywhere between 2 to 2.5% per year. And they're leased to high credit worthy tenants. So for example, we acquired an Amazon building actually earlier this year in January in Iowa City. We're getting ready to close on a AT&T warehouse in the Midwest within the next week. So we're buying buildings typically in secondary and tertiary markets to achieve higher yields. But we're not buying buildings that are leased to mom and pop kind of small companies. These are large multinational, multi-global corporations that have really good credit.
Very cool. That makes a ton of sense. The equity multiple is going to be lower as the risk goes down, right?
I will say this. Going into the deal, the equity multiple is lower. What we project, because it's based on the contractual rent and a conservative cap rate that we estimate on the disposition. However, what happens many times is we end up selling a building at a lower cap rate than we anticipate, and our equity multiple is higher. It happens quite a bit. So we go on being conservative, and the equity multiple may be not as high as what you would see in a value add deal. But again, like I said earlier, you know, you get stability in lieu of the value add component.
That makes total sense. And I like the strategy of buying in some of the tertiary markets where there's maybe not as much competition. You can get a little bit better equity yield. You're buying these deals with A-rated tenants like Amazon, AT&T. The cool thing is, from an investor standpoint, there's already a lease in place. It's already occupied. These are long leases. What's the average lease term on these deals you're buying?
I would say 7 years.
Okay.
We typically would not buy a building that had less than 5 years of term.
Okay.
I would say 7 years. You know, there's some that are 5 years, some that are 10, but on average, I would say around 7 years of term. And okay. And again, they have an annual rent escalation contractually in the lease. So we're getting 2 to 2.5% rent bumps per year.
Very cool. And I know that you're syndicating these. Let's talk about that side. Walk us through how you got into doing these syndications and what that generally looks like.
Yeah, for me, it was joining Cardinal, which has been around for 35 years. When I was in Columbus, they had owned some buildings in Columbus. So that's how I became familiar with them and knew I wanted to get into investing full time. So I contacted them directly, just how I got into real estate brokerage initially in 2007. I just contacted them directly, told them what I was, you know, who I was, what I was looking for, and set up a meeting. And next thing you know, I joined them as a principal, smaller company. So it's great. I get to wear multiple hats and learn a lot of different facets of the business. But mainly, Josiah, what I'm doing is really, the bulk of it is acquisitions, finding deals, leaning on my broker relationships in the Midwest to locate potential deals for us. We're buying in the Midwest, the Southeast, and Texas. So even though I'm located in California now, we're looking elsewhere to achieve higher yields. You can't get them on the coast right now.
Very cool. And yeah. I know we're running out of time. I know you've got another engagement coming up here, so I want to be mindful of that. But if someone wants to invest in one of your syndications, how can they find out more about you?
Yeah, sure. They can, I'll tell you what, you can go to my personal website. That's where they can find some content. I have a free ebook that gives a general overview of industrial real estate and passive investing. It's McGrathIndustrial.com. And then feel free to shoot me an email also. It's Kevin@CardinalIndustrial.com. And I love to talk shop. So if you have any questions or anything that you want me to answer for you, don't hesitate to shoot me an email or give me a call.
That'd be awesome. I'm going to ask you a question I ask all of our guests before we wrap up. Kevin, if I offered you a $10 million check and all the equity that you have in your current properties, but you could never, you had to walk away from real estate, could never mess with real estate again, you had to do something else, would you take it or not?
I would take it, yes.
So what is your why? Why are you doing real estate?
Wait, yeah. Are you saying I can't invest that $10 million in real estate?
No, you can invest. You can invest passively in other people's deals. You just could no longer be a principal, no longer be operating your own deals. Couldn't. Be.
I mean, Josiah, $10 million is a lot. If you had said $1 million or $2 million, I, you know, but $10 million, I'm not at that level yet. So, yeah. Here's what I would do with $10 million, because I've thought about it. It's a fun thing to think about. Yeah. Not necessarily $10 million, but yeah, a large amount of money. I would invest passively in someone else's deal, like I still do. By the way, I still invest in multifamily.
Sure.
And $10 million would net me, what is it, $800,000 a year?
Yeah.
in tax-free money. And I would take that $10 million.
That's not a bad take, right?
No. I would take the money.
I love it, yeah. Kevin. Well, hey, this has been awesome, man. Thanks for joining us and sharing your story and stuff. And we'll stay in touch. And if you're ever in the Huntsville area, look me up.
Yeah, we'll do. Appreciate it. It was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Catch you next time. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please connect with me on Instagram at Daily Real Estate Investor or via email at josiahsmelser@gmail.com. My new book titled Dream It and Build It, How to Crush Your Real Estate Investing Goals is out. You can get it either in digital or physical format on Amazon. Once you've read the book, please leave me a review. Tune in next time for another episode of the Daily Real Estate Investor as we both join in our financial freedom journey.